Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are still in the throes of the Virginia ratification debates, so that I don't have to necessarily delay getting into this, because I know most people are tuning in for the content, not necessarily the brilliant banter. But the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and RepublicReview.org. And usually when I get to those right off, you can tell we just really want to get into the meat of the content today. If you want to know what's coming up, you need to go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and take a look. It's not a crystal ball to give you really definitive information, but until we get through the ratification debates, we will not be doing really any of the news, because I can't tell you, the accidents and calamities and mayhem will continue. It's only going to get worse. And until you understand that the evidence points to Republic Review, the evidence points to the fact that the states hold and possess the authority and power over the Constitution, they have the ability to actually fix our problems. So regardless of the calamities that you're seeing, these problems do not have to continue. You can continue to immerse yourself into the news cycle, and we'll cover it, and we'll give you a constitutional perspective on that. But the fact of the matter is that nothing will change until we invoke the change. And the only way is to help you have all of the facts necessary. So we're on, I think this is like the 24th or 25th segment, or I should say show. So if you go back to the beginning, 24, 25 days ago or shows ago, that's probably where we just started covering the ratification debates. Those are the podcasts that you should be sharing with people so that everybody understands, you know, just how immense the evidence is that there is no such thing as interpretation of the Constitution. It's either in the contract or it isn't. And the definitions were very clear. The ratification debates are the integral part and legally binding appendages to the Constitution. It is a contract. The Constitution is a compact of the multiple parties being the states. The states are the principal parties. Therefore, when the states were sold this contract, how it was sold becomes legally binding terms and definitions of the compact. So with that, we will just dive forward. We do have a listener drive. We ask that you continue to share with like-minded people that they can, and if they do understand what is going on with this whole concept of unconstitutional government and what has to be done, if they understand this, then they should be getting engaged in the solution. Because until you're engaged in the solution, you are going to be a part of the problem, right? I mean, it's pretty much that simple. Anyway, we're going to just go ahead, we're going to go ahead and dive into what Mr. George Mason, I believe this is George Mason, yep, George Mason had to say in response to Governor Randolph, the comment that I made before, right before we closed out. I think we last closed out on Clay, but it was Governor Randolph that was talking about the militia. So this is what Mr. Mason says. After having read the clause which gives Congress power to provide for arming, organizing, and disciplining the militia, and governing those in actual service of the Union, declared it as his firm belief that it could include the power of annexing punishments and establishing necessary discipline, more especially in the construction of this and every part of the Constitution, was left to those who were to govern. If so, he asked if Congress could not inflict the most ignominious punishments on the most worthy citizens of the community. Would freemen submit to such an indignant treatment? It might be thought a strained construction, but it was no more than Congress might put upon it. He thought such severity might be exercised on the militia as would make them wish the use of the militia to be utterly abolished and assent to the establishment of a standing army. He then adverted to the representation and said it was not sufficiently full to take into consideration the feelings and sentiments of all the citizens. He admitted that the nature of the country rendered a full representation impracticable, but he strongly urged that impracticability as a conclusive reason for granting no powers to the government, but such as were absolutely indispensable, and these were most cautiously guarded. He then recurred to the power of impeachment. On this subject, he entertained great suspicions. He apologized for being suspicious. He entered into the world with as few suspicious, it says suspicious, but it probably means suspicions, as any young man. Young men, he said, were apt to think very well of everyone, till time and experience taught them better. After a treaty manifestly repugnant to the interests of this country was made, he asked how they were to be punished. Supposed it had been made by the means of bribery and corruption. Suppose they had received 100,000 guineas or louis d'ors from a foreign nation, obviously from France, for consenting to a treaty. How was the truth to be come at? Corruption and bribery of that kind had happened in other governments and might in this. The House of Representatives were to impeach them. The senators were to try themselves. If a majority of them were guilty of the crime, would they pronounce themselves guilty? Yet he says this is called responsibility. He wished to know in what court the members of the government were to be tried for the commission of indictable offenses or injuries to individuals. He acknowledged himself to be no lawyer, but he thought he could see that he could be tried neither in the state nor federal courts. The only means, therefore, of bringing them to punishment must be by a court appointed by law, and the law to punish them must also be by themselves. By whom is it to be made? demanded he. By the very men who are interested in not inflicting punishment. Yet, says he, though they make the law and fix punishments and will be inflicted on themselves, it is called responsibility. If the senators do not agree to the law, it will not be made, and thus they will escape altogether. And then they said, Mr. Mason animadverted the ultimate control of Congress. And they basically kind of capture what he was doing, but it was just hard for them to articulate for a period of time. So they kind of created this little summation regarding Mr. Mason and Mr. Nicholas kind of going back and forth. Then it gets back to Mr. Mason saying this. Mr. Mason then proceeded thus. If there be any other case, I should be glad to know them, for I know them not. If there be no other, why not confine them to these cases? But the power here, as in thousands other instances, is without reason. I have no power which by any other person call take from me. I have no right of representation if they can take it from me. I say, therefore, that Congress may, by this claim, take away the right of representation or render it nugatory, despicable, or oppressive. It is at least argumentative that what may be done will be done and that a favorite point will be done by those who can. Now, it's kind of interesting. You got to understand, Mason here is an anti-federalist, and he's making these exaggerated points to try to speak against his motive in what he's trying to say. And by the way, what he says, even though some of these things he says is insightful, like when he talks about how they're going to get rid of the militia, what he is talking about here is really just kind of like a sleight of hand, because he has an objective. He has an ulterior motive, and his motive was to convince the people to buy into a need to amend the Constitution with a Bill of Rights, to create greater limitations other than just creating enumerated powers. In other words, just delegating these powers. He wanted to add additional negatives against the general government. Believe me, I think most everybody at this point in time, except for the monarchists, like Hamilton and a few others, wanted a very limited government. They did not want an unlimited government. And so Mason goes on and says, suppose that the state of Virginia should adopt such regulations as gentlemen say, and in which I accord with my heart and divide the state into 10 districts. Suppose then the Congress should order, instead of this, that the election should be held in the borough of Norfolk. Will any man say that any man in Frederick or Berkeley County would have any share in this representation if the members were to be chosen in Norfolk? And so he's going to go on, and we're going to get back to what Mason has to say once we come back from these two promos. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so Mason's setting up this basically a speculation and or a hypothetical. And he says this: suppose the state of Virginia should adopt such regulations as gentlemen say, and in which I accord with all my heart, and divide the state into 10 districts. Suppose then that Congress should order, instead of this, that the election should be held in the borough of Norfolk. Will any man say that any man in Frederick or Berkeley County would have any share in this representation if the members were chosen in Norfolk? Nay, I might go further and say that the elections for all the states might be had in New York, and then we should have to go so far for that privilege would be lost altogether, but for a few gentlemen could afford to go thither. Some of the best friends of the Constitution have advocated that the election should be in one place. This power is not necessary and is capable of great abuse. It ought to be confined to the particular cases which they assert to be necessary. Whatever gentlemen may think of the opposition, I will never agree to give any power which I conceive to be dangerous. Now, here's a fact of the matter. Since the adoption of the Constitution, the ability for people to be able to vote grew and grew and grew until everybody could vote. And now it's getting to a point where it's not just every citizen. They're trying to give away the vote to people who are not citizens, who are not entitled to the pleasure and benefit of participating in our governmental process. And so I'm just trying to point out that this hypothesis, this supposed or hypothetical situation that Mason was trying to create never ever happened. It never happened. Anyway, I have doubts on another part. The fifth section of the first article states, quote, that each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same, accepting such parts as may in their judgment require secrecy. In other words, if there's a necessity for national security, then you want to keep that out. This enables them, but he points this out, this enables them to keep the negotiations about treaties secret. Under this veil, they may conceal anything and everything. Why not insert words that would exclude ambiguity and danger? The words of the Confederation, that defective system, are, in this respect, more eligible. What are they? In the last clause of the ninth article, it is provided, quote, that Congress shall publish the journal of their proceedings monthly, except such parts thereof relating to treaties, alliances, or military operations as in their judgment require secrecy. The proceedings by that system are to be published monthly with certain exceptions. These are proper guards. It is not so here. On the contrary, they may conceal what they please. Instead of giving information, they will produce suspicious. Now, in all honesty, he's got a point here. You cannot discover the advocates of their iniquitous acts. This is an additional defect of responsibility. Neither house can adjourn without the consent of the other for more than 3 days. This is no parliamentary rule. It is undertrodden ground, and it appears to me liable to much exception. The senators are chosen for 6 years. They are not recallable for those 6 years and re-eligible at the end of their 6 years. Actually, they are recallable because it didn't exist then, but the 14th Amendment, Section 3, can recall them. And as a matter of fact, in the Constitution, Article 4, the states, if they commit treason, the states can charge them with treason and extradite them. It stands on a different ground from the Confederation. By that system, they were only selected for 1 year, might be recalled, and were incapable of re-election. But in the new Constitution, instead of being elected for one, they are chosen for 6 years. They cannot be recalled in all that time for any misconduct, except for treason or bribery and those types of things. As a matter of fact, it's very clear who and how they can be removed. And at the end of that long term, it may be again re-elected. What will be the operation of this? It is not probable that those gentlemen who will be elected senators will fix themselves in the federal town and become citizens of that town more than our state. They will purchase a good seat in or near the town and become inhabitants of that place. Will they not be then in the power of the Senate to worry the House of Representatives into anything? They will be continually an existing body. They will exercise those machinations and contrivances which they may have always to fear from the few. Excuse me. The House of Representatives is the only check on the Senate with this enormous powers, but by that clause, you give them the power of worrying the House of Representatives into a compliance with any measure. The senators living on the spot will feel no inconvenience from long sessions as they will vote themselves handsome pay without incurring any additional expenses. Your representatives are on a different ground. From their shorter continuance of office, the gentleman from Georgia, or 600 or 700 miles, and wish to go home, the Senate taking advantage of this by stopping the House from adjourning while they worry them into ailing thing. These are my doubts, and I think that the provision not consistent with the usual parliamentary modes. So he brings up a good point that the Senate would probably become permanent residents. And if you ask me, this goes to a conversation, the interview I had with John Durash regarding with Keith. I've just had a few interviews this past week, and they will be aired. We will be airing those coming up as soon as we're done. But the interesting question is, how is it and who sets the parameters to qualify residency for somebody running for office? In other words, it must be stipulated that if you are a senator that represents the state of Hawaii or some far state away, to make sure or to guarantee that they are available as your representative, that they must reside and prove their residence, that they're actually there on a certain percentage of the year. Because they do have recesses, and so instead of allowing them to fly around and hobnob and position themselves for a presidential run or what have you, because they should be the resident of your state, not a permanent resident of Washington, D.C. So Mason makes a very good salient point. And the fact of the matter is, if you look, even congressmen have taken up permanent residency in the District of Columbia. Now, what we have next is Mr. Madison. And Mr. Madison says this: Mr. Chairman, I cannot think that the explanation of the gentleman last up is founded in reason. It does not say that the militia shall be called out in all cases, but in certain cases. There are cases in which the execution of the laws may require the operation of the militia, which cannot be said to be an invasion or insurrection. There may be a resistance to the laws which cannot be termed as insurrection. Now, the person that was just up was Mr. Clay, and I read him last in our previous episode. Anyway, Madison goes on and says, my honorable friend over the way has opened a new source of argument. He has introduced the assertion of gentlemen of are out of doors. If we thus depart from regularity, we shall never be able to come to a decision. If there be any gentleman who is a friend to the government and says that the elections may or ought to be held in one place, he is an enemy to it on that ground. With respect to the time, place, and manner of elections, I cannot think, notwithstanding the apprehension of the honorable gentleman, that there is any danger, or if abuse should take place, there is not sufficient security. If all people of the United States should be directed to go to elect in one place, the members of the government would be exacerbated for the infamous regulation. Many would go to trample them underfoot for their conduct, and they would be succeeded by men who would remove it. They would dare not to meet the universal hatred and detestation of the people, and to run the risk of the certain dreadful consequences. We must keep within the compass of human probability. If a possibility be the cause of objection, we must object to every government in America. But the honorable gentleman may say that the better guards may be provided. Let us consider the objection. And so with that, we will actually consider the objection when we come back after these two promos. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so Madison goes on and says this. If the power of regulating the time, place, and manner of elections must be vested somewhere, it could not be fixed in the Constitution without involving great inconveniences. They could then have no authority to adjust the regulation to the changes of circumstances. The question then is whether it ought to be fixed unalterably in the state governments or to be subject to the control of the general government. It is not obvious that the general government would be destroyed without this control. It has already been demonstrated that they will produce many conveniences. Have we not sufficient security against abuse? Consider fully the principles of the government. The sum of the power given up by the people of Virginia is divided into two classes, one to the federal and the other to the state government. Each is subdivided into three branches. These may be kept independent of each other in the one as well as the other. In this system, they are as distinct as is consistent with good policy. This, in my opinion, instead of diminishing, increases the security of liberty more than any government that ever was. For the power of government, which in every country are given to one body, are here given to two, and are favorable to public liberty. With respect to secrecy, if everything in which it is necessary could be enumerated, I would have no objection to mention them. All of the state legislatures keep secret what they think ought to be concealed. The British House of Commons can do it. They are in this respect under much less constraint than Congress. There never was any legislative assembly without a discretionary power of concealing important transactions, the publication of which might be detrimental to the community. There can be no real danger as long as government is constructed in such principles. He objects also to the clause reporting adjournment that there shall be that neither house shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days. It was before remarked that if the difference should take place between the houses about the time of adjournment, the president should still determine it, from which no danger could arise, as he is chosen in a secondary degree by the people, and would consequently fix no time which would be repugnant to the sense of the representatives of the people. Another and more satisfactory answer is this. Suppose the Senate wished to chain down the House of Representatives. What is it to hinder them from going home? How bring them back again? It would be contrary to the spirit of the Constitution to impede the operations of the government, perhaps at a critical period. I cannot conceive that such difference will often happen, where the Senate to attempt to prevent an adjournment, it would serve to irritate the representatives without having the attendant effect, as the president could adjourn them. There will be no occasion for the continual residence of the senators at the seat of government. What business have they more than the House of Representatives? The appointment of officers and treaties. With respect to the appointment of officers, a law may be made to grant it to the president alone. It must be supposed there will be but few and subordinate officers to be appointed, as the principal offices will be filled. It is observed that the president, when vacancies happen during the recess of the Senate, may fill them until it waits. With respect to treaties, the occasion of forming them will not be many, and it will... they think it will not be many, but they obviously they did not fathom the growth and the inner the global economy and all these interdependencies and so forth. Anyway, with respect to treaties, the occasion of forming them will not be many and will make but a small proportion of the time of session. Now, that was probably very true for the first century, but things have kind of changed a lot since then. Well, anyway, Mr. Clay then gets up and says he wished to know the instances where an opposition to the laws did not come with the idea of insurrection. Mr. Madison then got up and replied back to him that a riot did not come within the legal definition of an insurrection. There might be riots to oppose the execution of the laws, which the civil power might not be sufficient to quell. This was one case, that there might probably be other cases. He referred to the candor of the committee, whether the militia could ever be used to destroy themselves. And so Mr. Clay then steps up and... I just read that, so forgive me. The next jump down would be Mr. Madison after Mr. Henry spoke. And so this is his response to Mr. Henry. Mr. Chairman, I will endeavor to follow the rule of the House, but must pay due attention to the observations which fell from the gentlemen. I should conclude from abstracted reasoning that they were ill-founded, and that I should think that if there were any object which the general government ought to command, it would be the direction of the national forces, as the forces which lies in the militia is most safe, the direction of that part ought to be submitted to in order to render another force unnecessary. The whole point is that as long as we had the militia, we would not need a regular army. That the militia would be more than sufficient as an army. So Madison goes on and says, the power objected to is necessary because it is to be employed for national purposes. It is necessary to be given to every government. This is not opinion, but fact. The highest authority may be given that the want of such authority in the government protracted the late war and prolonged its calamities. He says that one ground of complaint at the beginning of the revolution was that a standing army was quartered upon us. This was not the whole complaint. We complained because it was done without the local authority of this country, without the consent of the people of America. As to the exclusion of standing armies in the Bill of Rights of the States, we shall find that though in one or two of them there is something like a prohibition, yet in most of them it is only provided that no army shall be kept without the legislative authority, that is, without the consent of the community itself. Where is the impropriety of saying that we shall have all army if necessary? Does not the notoriety of this constitute security? Inimical means hostile. So if hostile nations were to fall upon us when defenseless, what would be the consequence? Would it be wise to say that we should have no defense? Give me leave to say that the only possible way to provide against standing armies is to make them unnecessary. Now, as I was reading this, I was thinking about, clearly, when Japan was looking at attacking America, they thought about attacking the mainland. But they didn't attack the mainland because they knew that we were the most armed people in the world, and that they would get resistance from practically every house. And they were afraid of unleashing that. And so we're actually seeing that apparently foreign enemies are not afraid of unleashing and coming after our right to self-government and self-enforcement, and that we actually have the insane and or the contrary paradigm in shutting down our ability to enforce our Constitution. Therefore, they're working ardently and hard in trying to remove your ability to possess a gun. And the way they've worked their way down this path is that they have marginalized the militia. You got to understand that in the Second Amendment, it starts off with a well-regulated militia and it being necessary for the security of a state. And I paraphrase that, but the fact of the matter is, because the militia doesn't exist anymore, they have basically tried to create this disconnect to say, well, there's really no need for you to have any guns. You actually have to get a license to get a gun so that you can go hunting or what have you. And they're actually heading down this path. They're making they're connecting these types of dots, which fly in the face of the Constitution itself, that the militia is responsible for enforcing the laws of the Union, which is why Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15 states that Congress shall call upon the militia to execute the laws of the Union. So with that, we will come back to what we've covered so far from Madison. This is a long one, but we will be right back and cover this so that we can continue on and go through these insights of these brilliant men as they explain and discuss exactly what this Constitution means. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so I kind of looked ahead as to how much there is to really cover regarding the militia and the rest of the important factors of the Virginia ratification debates. And I got to be honest, reading at the clip that we're reading, the amount of stuff that we've got to cover, it's going to take probably another week and a half, 2 weeks maybe, to get through all of these. So I just want to prepare you that we won't be covering any unless we take an aside for a day to kind of just cover some of the things that are going on. The fact of the matter is that everything that is happening, regardless of whether it is you know, a terrible thing, whether things are just, not getting any worse or things that are getting worse. All of these things, all of these distractions are keeping us from understanding what we need to do and how to do it. Those of us who understand that if we do not engage in a solution, if you look at the education system, they're pumping communists into the electoral process today. We have to be very cognizant of the fact that we are losing time the longer we spend on looking at what the heck, these idiots are doing and so forth. So we got to get focused on understanding what they mean by this Constitution. And as a matter of fact, the explanations on how the federal government is to call for the elections and how all of these things are defined is critical. So back to what Madison was saying. How is it possible to answer objections against the possibility of abuses? It might strike every logical reasoner that these cannot be entirely provided against. I really thought that the objection of the militia was at an end. Was there ever a constitution in which if authority was vested, it must not have been executed by force if resisted? What or was it not in the contemplation of this state when the contemptuous proceedings were expected to recur to something of this kind? How is it possible to have a more proper resource than this? that the laws of every country ought to be executed cannot be denied. That force must be used if necessary cannot be denied. Can any government be established that will answer any put, pose whatever, unless force be provided for executing its laws? The Constitution does not say that a standing army shall be called out to execute the laws. Is it not more proper way the militia ought to be called forth to suppress smugglers? Will this be denied? The case, and as a matter of fact, we have smugglers that are constantly coming across our southern border. Will this be denied? The case actually happened in Alexandria. There were a number of smugglers who were too formidable for the civil power to overcome. The military quelled the sailors who otherwise would have perpetrated the intentions. Should a number of smugglers have a number of ships, the militia ought to be called forth to quell them. We do not know but what there may be a combination of smugglers in Virginia hereafter. We all know that the use of the Isle of Man, it was a general depository of contraband goods. The Parliament found the evil so great as to render it necessary to wrest it out of the hands of the out of its possessors. The honorable gentleman says that the government of force, if he means military force, the clause under consideration proves the contrary. There never was a government without force. What is the meaning of government? You know, lots of people talk about, you know, we got to have a passive government. Are you kidding me? And Madison talked about anarchy and despotism. One of the things that they clearly understood is as you have a democracy constantly teeters back and forth from anarchy to despotism, because as people react to the chaos and the confusion, they grant more powers in a more despotic government. And then once they become so despotic, they get overthrown and you have anarchy again. And it is literally a teetering back and forth. A government leaving it to man to do his duty or not as he pleases would be a new species of government, or rather, no government at all. The ingenuity of the gentleman is remarkable in introducing the Riot Act of Great Britain. That act has no connection or analogy to the regulation of the militia, nor is there anything in the Constitution to warrant the general government to make such an act. It never was a complaint in Great Britain that the militia could be called forth. If riots should happen, the militia are proper to quell it, to prevent a resort of another mode as to the infliction of ignominious punishment. We have no ground of alarm. If we consider the circumstances of the people at large, there would be no punishments so ignominious as to have inflicted already. The militia law of every state to the north of Maryland is less rigorous than the particular law of this state. If a change be necessary to be made to the general government, it will be in our favor. I think that the people of those states would not agree to be subjected to a more harsh punishment than their own militia laws inflict. An observation fell from the gentleman on the same side with myself, which deserves to be attended to. If we be dissatisfied with the national government, if we should choose to renounce it, this is the additional safeguard to our defense. I conceive that we are in particular interest in giving the general government as extensive means as possible to protect us. Now, I don't know if you just heard what I just said, but I want you to hear it again. If we be dissatisfied with the national government, the federal government, the general government, if we should choose to renounce it, this is an additional safeguard to our defense. In other words, we have not only the rights, but the privileges and a safeguard to be able to do just that. I conceive that if we are of particular interest, or if we are particularly interested in giving the general government an extensive means as possible to protect us, if there be a particular discrimination between places in America, the southern states are, from their situation and circumstances, more interested in giving the national government the power of protecting its members. Then they make a little note here. Oh, well, this is a point in time when Madison was very, you know, not very audible. An act passed a few years ago in the state to enable the government to call forth the militia to enforce the laws when a powerful combination should take place to oppose them. This is the same power which the Constitution is to have. There is a great deal of difference between calling forth a militia when a combination is formed to prevent the execution of laws and the sheriff or constable carrying with him a body of militia to execute them in the first instance, which is a construction not warranted by the clause. There is an act also in this state empowering the officers of the customs of summon to summon any person to assist them when they meet with obstruction in executing their duty. This shows the necessity of giving the government power to call forth the militia when the laws are resisted. It is a power vested in the legislature in the Union and which is necessary to every government. He then moved the clerk should read those acts which were accordingly read. And so then they went off and read these things. And so the next person up is George Mason, and he basically asked what was the purpose of reading the law? The objection was that too much power was given to Congress, power that would finally destroy the state governments more effectually by insidious, underhanded means and than such as would openly practice. This, said he, is the opinion of many worthy men, not only of the convention, but in the parts of America. These laws could only show that the legislature of this state could pass such acts he thought would be militated against the cession of power to Congress, because the state governments could call forth the militia when necessary as to compel a submission to the laws. And as they were competent to it, Congress ought to not have the power. The meeting of three or four persons might be called an insurrection. And today, it's called domestic terrorism if you speak out against your government. I just want to emphasize this. What is even more important, and Mason actually gets into martial law, but what I want to focus on, because I've got less than a half a minute, if we be dissatisfied with the national government, if we should choose to renounce it, this is an additional safeguard to our defense. What is he talking about? He is talking about having the militia, because the militia is to enforce the Constitution, because they're people from our state, they're our neighbors. These are the people that have been vested the authority of executing the laws of the Union. And with that, we have an extra safeguard. And it is very clear to me the brilliance of this system. So, with that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we'll be back in our next episode with more Virginia ratification debates. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.